Good evening, everyone. It's time to take charge of your life. Hello, this is marriage and family therapist Eleanor Barbaro, your host, inviting you to take charge of your life on WDIY. The theme of this program is that so many events in life happen to us over which we have no control. Our only control is our response to life's situations. It is often said that 90% of life's events happen to us, and 10% is what we make happen. Tonight we talk about how research shows that many people seeking meaning and engagement with life often correlate with life satisfaction. How do we find ways to engage in what brings us joy and meaning? My guest this evening maintains that joy and meaning come from learning to embrace three fundamental principles: sweetness, structure, and space, and that these three principles can take us from being overwhelmed, passive in our lifestyles, to being empowered and fully engaged in life, even in the face of chaos. My guest this evening is Dr. Peter Borton, who co-authored with his wife, Brianna, The Well Life, How to Live and How to Use Structure, Sweetness, and Space to Create Balance, Happiness, and Peace. Dr. Peter Borton is a doctor of Asian medicine who helps people attain the whole health of body and mind. He and his wife, Brianna, are the founders of Rituals of Living, an online community, and Dragon Tree, a holistic wellness brand. He has authored many articles on topics of stress and emotional wellness, nutrition, and fitness. It is a pleasure to welcome Dr. Peter Borton to help us take charge of our lives on WDIY. Welcome, Dr. Peter Borton.
Hi, Allie. Thanks for having me.
Yes, you have written a very interesting book called The Well Life. How did you and your wife come to write this book? How did you come to feel that it was an important subject for people to address?
Well, we've both been practitioners of Eastern medicine, traditional Chinese medicine for me and Ayurvedic medicine for my wife since about 2000. And over the years, we noticed that many of our patients were essentially healthy by usual standards, like they had a functional mind and body, and yet they probably wouldn't say that their lives were working to their satisfaction. And we started to look at whether our definition of health was really applicable if their lives weren't functional in a way that came anywhere near what their potential was. So we started to expand our definition of what whole life wellness should be, or could be anyway. And from talking to people and making our own assessments of how of what was and wasn't working in their lives, we began to decide that our expanded definition of whole life wellness should include things like having healthy and supportive relationships, having ample income, having the ability to set and achieve goals, doing work that you feel is significant and meaningful and lets you use your gifts, and things like that, so that there's no arena of life that's really deprived of wellness if we're really talking about whole wellness.
And how?
So we thought about, go ahead.
And how did you come to incorporate these three fundamental principles, sweetness, structure, and space?
Well, both of these systems that we were trained in look to the elements of the natural world as part of their philosophical foundation. They talk about things like fire and water and air as metaphors for the dynamics that occur in human life, as well as literal ways that the natural world sort of ebbs and flows and balances itself out. So coming from that background of this kind of natural language of these elements that are sort of interdependent but work together and each have their own individual strengths, we kind of naturally hit upon a language that worked in a similar kind of elemental way, like these three major pillars that support us in establishing a well life. And structure was really the first thing that I think we worked on with most of our clients that most of them had some structure already, but we encountered a number of people who didn't want structure because I think they believed that it would limit their freedom in some way, that life would feel less spontaneous if they put everything into their calendar. And so they would resist structure, but they would still be trying to keep track of everything in their minds, and we recognized that wasn't working for them. So we needed to teach them about structure as kind of an intelligent and organic thing. And then the sweetness piece was something that we recognized a lot of people were leaving out when they had overly structured lives, especially that they weren't really taking the time to prioritize the good stuff in life. And the third element we recognized more from kind of stepping back, that there was a need for space in their consciousness and in their lives to for them to see and the big picture of it all.
Now, let's make sure we're all on the same ground here. What are you really referring to when you talk about structure? Are you talking about organization of time? Is that what you mean? Organization of our thoughts? Is that what you mean by structure?
We mean both of those things and more. We usually explain it to people as it's kind of the life architecture that you establish that allows you to balance all the things that you have going on. It's what gets you from point A to point B for any goal, from getting yourself to work to something much more ambitious, like starting a charity or moving across the country. And we aren't necessarily saying that people need more structure, but that we want people's life structures to be forged consciously. And a lot of people just come up with some sort of structure without any instruction in it, maybe as a teenager or as a young adult, and they never go back and really revise it. And it might not be an efficient way for them to be living, or they might have outdated elements to their structure that aren't really applicable to their current life anymore.
Can you give us an example of what you mean by structure? I was just thinking that when my husband decided to make a change from one profession to another, he was a teacher and decided to enter the clergy, and we decided that in order to make a transition, we would like to see the country and see the various communities in the United States. But because he was working, he was teaching, my job became to organize the trip. Is that what you mean by structure?
Absolutely. All of our plans, from the kind of moment short-term plans to the very big life plan, all kind of fall under that heading of structure. And you know, for instance, we had lived in Portland, Oregon for 15 years, and we wanted to make a move to a sunnier place after a while. We love Portland, but it's rather gloomy there. And since we'd been there for so long, it involved a lot of structure to sort of pull up our roots and decide how we were going to, you know, everything from finding a house to doing the actual move to choosing schools for our children and everything else.
And so that was fine. That was organizing a new structure for you and your wife and your family.
Yeah.
So if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Take Charge of Your Life. This is your host, Eleanor Barbro, and tonight we're talking with Dr. Peter Borton, co-author of The Well Life, How to Use Structure, Sweetness, and Space to Create Balance, Happiness, and Peace. So, Dr. Borton, we've talked a little bit about structure. What about the other elements in that you find necessary? Sweetness.
So sweetness is our term for all of the soul-nourishing and feel-good stuff of life, from cooking and eating to hanging out with friends and spending time with family to exercising, stretching, taking a bath, looking at art. It's the stuff that most people probably on their deathbed would look back at as the peak stuff, the best parts of life. And yet, what we've noticed is that a lot of people regard these aspects of life as something of a treat or even an indulgence, and that therefore the sweetness of life is something that can be put off until later if life gets busy. So we save the sweetness off until the end of the day, or maybe the weekend, or maybe we put it off the whole way until retirement. So our message for people in the realm of sweetness is to recognize that it's not an indulgence. It's actually a really important and fortifying part of life, that when you regularly incorporate the sweetness along the way to whatever destination you're heading toward, that it makes you more authentically you. It makes you better able to do your work because you're really nourished. And regardless of whether or not you make your goals, you've had a sweet journey along the way. So by most people's standards or definitions of a good life, you've done it if you regularly incorporate these things.
Can you give us an example of sweetness, perhaps in your life or someone else's life, a client that you've dealt with? What are you specifically? Give us an example.
Well, for me, one of the sweetest parts of my life is reading stories to my 9-year-old daughter every night. And it's something that I'm always reluctant to sacrifice. If things are, we're running late for whatever reason, and I know that it's way past her bedtime, I always want to at least take a few minutes to read with her because it's really peaceful, good, connecting time. And we've had a number of clients who have been able to, as they really have looked closely at the way their life is structured, they recognize that there's very little sweetness in the work that they're doing, and they realize that there's such an opportunity for them to choose a path in their career that incorporates more sweetness by, say, we've had clients who have been musicians and yet not really using their musical skills, and they've found ways to bring music into their work or bring art into their work, and so they've sweetened it. And so besides telling people to schedule these sweetness kinds of activities into their schedule, a big part of bringing more sweetness into your life is learning to discover the sweetness that's already there.
And we're going to talk more with Dr. Peter Borton, who is co-author with his wife, Brianna, of The Well Life, when we return to Take Charge of Your Life on WDIY.
Spread the word about your organization or business to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced music programs reaches thousands of locally engaged listeners each day. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable way to enhance your image and to provide information about your services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, call 610-694-8100, extension 6, or visit our website, wdiy.org.
If you are a Golden Age folky and love the music of Woody Guthrie, Bob Dylan, Judy Collins, Joan Baez, and the Kingston Trio, WDIY is the place to be on Monday nights. From 7 to 9 p.m. on Folk Classics, all of that great music from the late 1940s to the late 60s will fill the airwaves, and we will welcome your ideas about the artists and songs you'd like to hear. Folk Classics, Mondays from 7 to 9 p.m. right here on WDIY.
Welcome back to Take Charge of Your Life. Hello, this is Eleanor Bobrow, your host. And this evening we're talking with the author of a very specially interesting book called The Well Life, written by Dr. Peter Borton and his wife, Brianna. And we're talking about strategies to really increase our ability to be satisfied with life, to create balance, happiness, and peace. And in this next section, this session now, we're going to talk about this, things that really bother, I'm sure, so many people. Dr. Peter Borton, we're going to talk about strategies for the inner critic that so many of us feel, particularly when things are not going well. Tell us, let's talk about some strategies that you've developed in the book, which are excellent.
Thank you. Well, I think We all have some kind of inner critic, and it's useful, I think, for people to kind of try to turn up the volume on that voice and really recognize that often it's a whole sort of personality. And the more we can come to recognize it, and the more even caricaturized we can make it and possibly even give it a name, the easier it is for us to recognize it when it pops up and to manage it in some way.
Give us an example.
Well, you know, different strategies work for different people, so we propose a few. But one of the most basic ones is something we call thank you, I love you, I'll take it from here. And the basis of this one is to consider that in some kind of confused way, your mind is trying to protect you, and it's feeding you these negative messages because it believes that your survival or happiness is somehow threatened by whatever's coming up right now. But usually it's acting on outdated information or some earlier scar in life. And so for many people, rather than fighting with the inner critic, just to thank it, to recognize this is the part of my consciousness that is trying to protect me. And so to say to it, thank you, I love you, but I'll take it from here. I can forge my own new decisions and a path that isn't dictated by future scars.
Well, that's a very interesting concept, Dr. Peter Borton. What you're saying is not to engage with it, to recognize
right.
for what it is, and rather than engage with it, which gives it more power. Because with the more we engage, the bigger and the louder that voice gets.
Absolutely. Especially if we engage with it in a resistant or adversarial kind of way. So another way of kind of diffusing that energy, that fight, is to just get silly with it. Maybe you could really, really amplify that inner voice and imitate it perhaps in a silly voice like Bugs Bunny or Bart Simpson or something, and laugh at it and just make it so ridiculous so that it sounds like the kind of inner criticisms you're making toward yourself are just so over the top that it kind of deflates that bully's sails in a way.
Let's talk about an example. For example, many people are looking for a new job right now for various reasons, and perhaps they have an inner critic inside that, and they're looking at the possibilities of a new position, and inside the critic goes, "What do you want to apply for that? You know you're not going to be any good at that," and you get a whole a whole vindictive voice that says that you're not good and don't bother to apply. How would you suggest coping with that?
Right. So first of all, many people will probably simply have kind of a bad feeling, and they may or may not even recognize the thoughts that are generating that bad feeling. So first, if you can actually tune in for a minute, just, you know, quiet your mind and hear what are those specific criticisms, and then challenge them in some way, or say, as we spoke of a moment ago, thank you for your input. I'm going to take it from here, or to choose some sort of empowering alternative to whatever your mind is offering you. If it's you're no good, or you're not going to you're not going to get that job or something, you could say something like, you know what, I choose to give myself the opportunity to see what happens, or I choose to bring my gifts into the world, or I choose to believe that I have something to offer. And usually these choice statements or statements that start with I trust or I allow, like I trust myself to do the best that I can with the resources that are available to me, or I allow myself to be guided to do something purposeful that serves my community. Sometimes your mind has a hard time believing something that's in direct opposition to what your inner critic is saying. If you say, no, I'm actually an amazing worker that everybody wants, maybe that's a little bit hard for you to swallow. But if you say something like, well, I choose to offer my services to the world, or I trust that I can do something useful in the world, or I allow myself to be guided to purposeful action, that's a little bit harder for your mind to argue with.
So what you're saying is but what you're really proposing, Dr. Peter Borton, co-author of The Well Life, How to Use Structure, Sweetness, and Space to Create Balance, Happiness, and Peace, what you're really saying is to become aware specifically of the words that are going on in your head that are the inner critic, and to be responsive to it.
Yes. We really do think in language, and that language is critical, really, to the kind of emotional responses that come up and often sort of color our perception of how we feel all day long. So those specific words are important to hone in on if you can.
So we have to be responsive to the inner critic. And not let it go. Is that what
you
said?
No. Otherwise, it can undermine us at a kind of below the radar level, where all day long we're in some way subconsciously being demeaned by it. But we have to bring it up above the radar. I mean, we have to amplify it in such a way that it's there for us to do something with, whether it's to diffuse it or to challenge it. But I agree with you, your point of earlier, that fighting with it is almost never useful because we're in a conflict all day.
So the important thing is to recognize it and deal with it and use some strategies that you've suggested, which do not involve confronting, but dealing with it and owning it and saying, thank you, but no thank you.
Exactly.
And not being confrontational, because being confrontational only makes the argument go higher, and nothing is accomplished.
Yeah, there are some cases where people, some of our clients have told us they've done well with that by arousing kind of a fierceness in them, and really saying, you know, shut up to their inner critic, and that works for them. But I do think that ultimately they need to work on that script and revise that inner script somehow.
And let's also talk about you mentioned something in your book, The Well Life. You have some very strong chapters on keeping your word, that you mentioned keeping your word may be the most positive life changing habit that we can adopt.
Yeah. So I think that people are usually pretty good about keeping their word with others. When they make an agreement with another person, they probably have some recognition that if they break their agreement, if they don't show up to lunch or whatever, that there's going to be a consequence that they don't want, an undesired consequence, that it's going to hurt their relationship with that person. And yet, I think it's way less common for people to have that same kind of integrity with themselves. We make agreements with ourselves all the time, like New Year's resolutions that probably many of your listeners have just done. Or we decide, you know, I'm going to work out 3 days this week. And then when it comes up and we don't want to do it or we forget about it or something, we almost always just let ourselves off the hook without considering the consequence to ourselves. And I believe that when we don't keep agreements that we make with ourselves, that it's like telling yourself, you don't really matter. I don't need to keep my agreements with you because you don't really matter. You're going to let me off the hook. But it's damaging to our self-trust. And when we decide to take on some big goal, chances are there will be a lot of mental history to undermine us, that our mind is going to come up with plenty of evidence that chances are we're not going to keep our agreements and we're not going to see this through. So we feel it's really important for people to begin to work on being conscious of the agreements they make with themselves and keeping these agreements so that they can reestablish trust in themselves. And after a while of doing this, where you recognize everything I say I'm going to do gets done, then when you say, I'm going to do something really big right now, chances are you're going to make it happen, and your mind is there to support you rather than undermine you.
I think that's very important, Dr. Peter Borton. that it really it takes away the impact of the inner critic when we keep our words to ourselves.
It's true.
And that takes away the power of the inner critic, because we've been building ourselves by keeping our word to ourselves so that there's less to fight about inwardly. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
We trust ourselves to manage whatever might come up.
So this has been this is a very special book, and the book is The Well Life. Now, you also have a community online. How would people get in touch with you if they wanted to be part of your community online?
Well, they can go to thedragontree.com, thedragontree.com. That's our main website where people can find out about our books and our community. And we have a book that preceded this one called The Dream Book, which is about developing your goals into plans and making them happen. And the community that's developed around that is over 5,000 people on Facebook who are wonderfully supportive.
Dr. Peter Borton, is there a website for the book?
Yes, there's a site for the book called thewelllifebook.com. And, of course, people can find it at places like Amazon and Barnes & Noble.
Well, I want to thank you, Dr. Peter Borton, co-author of The Well Life, How to Use Structure, Sweetness, and Space to Create Balance, Happiness, and Peace, for helping us to take charge of our lives by giving ourselves a total life makeover, by incorporating sweetness, what feeds your soul, structure, an intentional framework, and peace, purposeful time for reflection, and for helping us to create a positive mindset. Thank you for helping us to understand that keeping your word may be the most positive, life-changing habit that we can adapt, and most importantly, defining what we want from life so that we can create a path forward. Thank you again for listening. Thank you, Neil Heaver, producer. See you all on the radio next Monday evening at 6:30 p.m. when I again invite you to take charge of your life on WDIY.